This is Lake Effect from 89.7 WUWM, Milwaukee Public Radio. Good morning, I'm Mitch Tyke.
And I'm Audrey Nowakowski. It's a big election day across Wisconsin today. To respect our listeners' right to decide for themselves, we won't be featuring political interviews on today's show. The polls are open today until 8 o'clock at night.
You can tune in beginning at 8 this evening for coverage, and we'll bring you analysis tomorrow morning of the results of the races for mayor, county executive, state Supreme Court justice, and, of course, the presidential primaries.
But we're going to start today's show with a Milwaukee psychologist whose work has touched practically every strata of the community, from his efforts to help children, to incarcerated people, to members of the Milwaukee Bucks.
Dr. Ramel Smith's private practice is called Blacksmith. That's B-L-A-Q-U-E, Smith. He spoke with Lake Effect contributor Mark Segrist and started by explaining the significance of the name.
When you're trying to think of a business name, you're trying to think of something personal. And when I created my business, a lot of people don't know what happened was me and my wife, we just had a daughter who died stillborn. Hmm. And when you're going through like these emotions, you have so many different emotions inside of you. And one of the things I had was like this energy. I didn't know what to do with it. So, you know, being a psychologist, I was like, well, if I can't use this constructively, how can I help anybody else? And so that's actually when my business began. So it's like when thinking of the name, it's almost like the same type of energy you put in putting into a baby's name. You know, this is something that's special to you. And so most people thought just because my last name was Smith and I was black, that's where blacksmith came from. But that necessarily wasn't it. The blacksmith in times of antiquity was the person who could fix anything or make anything for the community. Sort of like we look at like a Walmart nowadays. You go there for a one-stop shop. The blacksmith could fix anything. And so I tried to look at myself as an emotional blacksmith for the community. But then when I started to look at blacksmith, I didn't want anybody who I work with to think that my practice was confined to just one specific culture or one specific race or demographic. The fraternity I belong to, Omega Psi Phi Fraternity Incorporated, our nickname are the Q's, Q-U-E. And one of the things of our fraternity is it's about upliftment to our service, to our society at large. And so when I saw that, I said I could put the Q-U-E in, still have the black, and it would mean that I'm here for everybody to fix everybody up. And as a black person, I did like the fact that we had something that had the term black in it that had positive connotation. So when people see that, I wanted them to look at me as an emotional blacksmith, someone who could uplift all aspects and sects of our community.
And you're a healer.
Yeah. You know what? I look at this as, even though I'm a psychologist and sometimes people take out a spiritual component, I kind of subscribe to a biopsychosocial spiritual model where, you know, it's a very holistic approach and when you're helping people to do everything. So when I look at it, it's like a ministry of healing, of helping, and everybody in which way in which they need it.
So when you team up with an MD and you're collectively caring for the health and well-being of a patient, you're very much on the same page.
Oh, exactly. I think if all of those entities are not there, that's when you're in trouble. One of the things I try to look at myself as is a person who does palliative care. When you look at palliative services, this person usually approaching the end of life, and I think that's when we get it right. You have all of the entities come together from the medical range, social range, personal range, spiritual, family, everybody working together as one. And I said, but what if we could do that proactively earlier in life? So whenever I work with any other entities, it's paramount for me to make sure that we include everybody who's important in that person's circle. So whether working with the MD or doctor stand on that page or any other aspect that's important to the person.
Why does it take us so long to figure it out?
You know what? I don't know. I wish we did, but I think we're starting to figure it out. Now is the fact, can we implement it and can we do it regularly and can we do it on a broad scale, whole scale? And so I think that's the biggest issue. So when you start to look at like collaborative support teams, when you look at collective impacts, where we say we need to take a cradle to the grave approach with people and humanity. Let's be honest. We live in America. America is a capitalistic society. So for some things to be driven, it needs to make economic sense. And I think if we can show to philanthropists, we can show to businesses how it makes economic sense for everybody to be involved from a cradle to a grave aspect, we can get that. And instead of people working in their individual silos, if we can get them to say, hey, listen, you work in your silo, but we have sort of like a connecting bridge. When you're done with this area, we pass you over to this person, but we still work collectively together and everybody can benefit, I think that's when it starts to make sense for society at large. And if our society is really going to live up to our founding fathers, I think, original creed, I think that's what we have to do.
As we pass through life, doctor, do we learn more from our failures or from our successes?
Well, if we're smart, we learn from both. You have a set of twins who had a father who was an alcoholic, and one didn't drink and one did drink. And you ask them both, and you ask the one who did drink, he said, "Why did you drink?" He said, "Because my dad drunk." And then sure. You ask the one who didn't drink, he said, "I didn't drink because I saw my dad drink." And so I think that goes to your question. We learn from our successes. How can we replicate? If we validated something that's successful, how can we be smart enough to replicate it, that methodical discipline to do it over and over again? And if we have a failure, we don't look at it so much necessarily as a failure. I believe it was Lee Iacocca who said, F. Scott Fitzgerald said, never confuse a single defeat with a final defeat. Mm-hmm. And so when we look at our mistakes or our temporary failure, say, how can we learn from these? How can we grow from this? So I think we can equally learn from both. But obviously, the successes, we learn with a smile. Those failures, we learn with a frown. But if we're smart, we learn from it and turn that smile, that frown upside down and turn it into a smile, into successful things.
At how early of an age in our development do we begin to form opinions of ourselves, others, begin to be influenced by what's around us? Are we pretty young?
Oh, that is it. You hit the nail on the head with that. Our social psychologists, our neurologists will tell you that the human brain from the ages of 0 to 5 is 90% developed in the brain. And so when you start to think about a person's personality, characteristics, things of that nature, that means so many of the things that make us up who we are as a person almost predates us from what we can remember from a conscious level. Mm-hmm. Most people start to have memories from 4 and 5, just as far as memories to talk about dates and incidents and things have happened. But those things that happen to us prenatally, those things that happen to us in utero, in the womb, those things that happen when we're born have the most impression. So a great way to think about it is when you think about a child and you say the ability to learn multiple languages. Well, when's the easiest time for them to do that? When they're young and they don't quite understand it. And the reason why it is because we have these neurons in our brains and they're all there. They're all firing. They're all snapping. Those are abilities to learn, these abilities to trigger different intellectual capabilities. But as we don't use them, they fall off. Mm-hmm. So that's why it becomes difficult to do those things. So answering your question, that 0 to 5 is so paramount. That's why birth to 3 programs, Head Start programs, prenatal care for our emerging mothers are so absolutely essential. Sometimes parents don't understand what their actions outside of when the child is in the womb, and soon after they're outside the womb can have on them. So when we start talking about developing a person's personality, a brain, a temperament, attachment disorder, these all things start from a kid when they're an infant, before they can speak, before they can articulate what they're feeling. So when we look at babies and we talk about attachment disorders, if you're a baby and you're crying and nobody's there to accommodate your needs, whether it's because your diaper is wet or because you're hungry or because you just want love, if nobody's there to attend to that, you begin to look at the world as a cold place and I have to become self-protective. On the contrary, conversely, if you do have someone to change your diapers, you do have someone to feed, you do have someone to love, you have a trusting and a loving developmental relationship with your caregivers, and that extends to other people. But going back on the other side, if you don't have that, not only do you not have an attachment with your caregivers, but unconsciously, that's what makes it difficult for us to have an attachment to other people who may be trying to help us.
But you said even the womb experience, citing prenatal care, for example,
yes,
that's
sir.
Why that is so important, because the infant, when the infant is still in the womb, he or she is picking up on the mother's emotions, sounds
exactly.
in the room,
yes,
whatever, both sensory and other type of stimulation.
Yeah, and even just from a biological standpoint, we understand that going from the first trimester to the second trimester to the third trimester has these pivotal points. And so when we talk about these crucial periods, we talk about these periods where certain parts of the brain is developing, certain parts of just the body and anatomy is developing. These are crucial areas. So when certain parts of our body is being developed, if there's certain what we call teratogens are introduced to the body, it can have a problem. And that's why sometimes if a mother introduces let's say something like drugs, or she's exposed to a lot of bad air at critical periods of times when lungs are developing, that's when you see kids come out with a low birth rate, premature, with a propensity to have a higher rate for asthma, these certain things. If we can understand that from a physical standpoint, we also have to understand the mental or emotional capacity that feeling the stress from a mom can have on that baby and that developing brain.
And in your own academic discipline and preparation for your practice, that's why you find all this stuff fascinating, because education is very much a part of your academic background.
Yeah, you know,
educational psychology.
Yeah, I originally was going to school to be a school psychologist,
right.
And so that was my dream. And I got a chance to be a school psychologist in Milwaukee Public Schools. Inside of that discipline, you become more of a psychometric, where you're doing a lot of testing, placing kids into special education. It's not the pure type of clinical services that I think so many of our children need. And that's why I switched over to more of the clinical side, where I began working in the prison system, then at Children's Hospital, and even today now, where I get a chance to work with professional athletes from different realms, but more specifically right now with the Milwaukee Bucks.
And how do you keep, speaking of the Bucks, one of the more interesting clients that you have, but your clients actually range from police officers to educators to inmates within the correctional system,
correct.
Right?
Correct.
Corporate culture.
Yes, sir.
You're sort of the Dr. Phil of Milwaukee. but in so doing, in that relationship, you're giving training seminars, you're giving one-on-one counseling, and some pretty serious therapeutic one-on-one stuff.
Well, yeah, you know, this is the one thing. Once you work inside of a correctional facility, I consider a correctional facility equal to that in New York. They say if you can make it in New York, you can make it anywhere. Once you've worked in a correctional setting, you've worked with every aspect of our society,
sure.
Unfortunately. And those who have hit their nadir or their low point. And the one thing about it, people always say, well, how was it working at a prison or a correctional institution? And I said, for me, obviously you don't like to see people in those situations, but that's when you get to see people at a humble point, but their ears are open, their eyes are open, they're willing to listen, they're willing to learn, and they give you so much information. So when you go back into society at large, you've dealt with people in the business community, you've dealt with professional athletes, you've dealt with professional entertainers, you've dealt with mothers and fathers that dealt with just a multitude, a plethora of situations. So when you come out, you feel like, hey, I have all this information now. How do I spread it to help people? We talked about, do we learn from success or failures? There was a quote I learned, said, a smart man learns from his mistakes, but a wise man learns from the mistakes of others. But a fool continues to repeat the same mistakes over and over again. And so I said, working in the prison, you work with people who are smart. They made mistakes, but they learn from them. But when I go out and do it, get a chance to do it, whether it's training, seminars, or workshops, I try to give people a chance to become wise, while I try to get that information myself so I can be wise, learning from the mistakes of others so I don't have to repeat those and make them myself.
How does a clinical psychologist help a NBA professional athlete grounded and and able to be competitive and yet comfortable with life?
Yeah, because at the end of the day, and a professional athlete, a professional entertainer is a person just like you and I. Sometimes we put people on pedestals and we make them something that they're not, meaning superhuman. So when you get to a person specifically within the professional realm, what they look for is somebody who can care about them organically and authentically, who doesn't care about them because of their status or other things that they can bring. And they actually crave to have those regular relationships again, you know, something where you say, this person genuinely concerned about me as a person, and not just because of what I do on a court or a field or anything like that, but because they want my best interest. So, you know, how do you keep them grounded? Well, if they come from a good stock, meaning their parents or their grandparents or whoever was responsible for nurturing, you already have a base. And what you do is just help them to remind them of the things they already know. And that's all of us in life. We can, you know, we can lose our course at times. But whenever you have those solid words, those axioms that you got from mom, from grandma to go back to, you know, that's what we do. And so when you talk about how do you keep a person grounded, you just talk about the realities of life, because we've seen far too many athletes, entertainers soar to the top and then find that hard, hard fall to the bottom. And that's because they did not take care of things emotionally, physically, financially, things of that nature. And so we try to help them to learn from the failures of others so they don't have to repeat those failures.
But that pressure to be at the top of your game every night has got to be overwhelming sometimes.
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, it's a job like most people will never understand. you know, because you are performing in front of literally live thousands, tens of thousands of people, and sometimes millions of people from a television, from a broadcast standpoint. Your every aspect of life is scrutinized, which most of us, you know, don't have to deal with. So that becomes very difficult. But so it's about then, how do I learn from past mistakes? How do I keep myself, you know, in a position where I don't embarrass myself, my family, my organization, things of that nature? And so it's just talking about the simple things. And if you can stay ahead of it, what our whole goal is always to be is to be proactive, to do things from a preventative standpoint, not after someone has had these bad things happen. So let's look at a big thing that happened in our sports world. Everybody understands the horrendous videotape of domestic violence scene by the football player in Baltimore. We tell them, one, it's not that you got caught. You don't even want to be involved in that kind of action.
Right.
You don't want that involved with your name. And if that is an issue, well, what are some steps we can do to prevent that, whether it be, you know, anger management, whether it's about communication skills, you know, learning those things that everybody needs to understand. But understanding if you do something, it can be magnified to a whole nother level. And the player we talked about, Ray Rice, he was a citizen in that community for over 10 years, had an impeccable reputation. But now, you know, he's the face of, you know, domestic violence as it relates to sports. As we're talking about it now, we talk about his is one of the first names because that tape was so visual. So we tell people, one, we don't want to hurt anybody who we love, whether it's, you know, captured on tape or anything. That's the first thing. But two, you don't want your name to be associated with something where you say, this is not even really who I am. This could be me on a bad day, on my worst day. But to put yourself in a position to always be successful, to put yourself to minimize mistakes, to put yourself in a place where you understand what's on the line. And it's not just the branding and the name from a standpoint from the sports world and fans, but more importantly, for your family and for yourself.
Dr. Smith, it's been a pleasure. I know your schedule's busy. Thank you so much.
Thanks a lot for having me.
Psychologist Ramel Smith's practice is called Blacksmith Psychological Consultative Services. He spoke with Lake Effect contributor Mark Segrist.